Fucks me up to leave like that. Oh, okay.
Mic check, 1, 2, 1, 2. Everybody in the club.
He never does a mic check anymore.
Everyone's getting anxious.
Good check.
In chat. He knows. He's got the levels.
Except when you started your stream today and your mic was muted.
I didn't select. Okay, now we're good. Now I see you charting. All right.
Dude, he did the same thing.
Hello, everyone. It's Dylan from Yu-Gi-Oh! Everything, and welcome back to another Talking Yu-Gi-Oh! Arc 5 analysis. These are going to be the coverage of episodes 7 and 8. The introduction of a man who is not named in the episode. And I kind of spoiled that for the guys. No worries. Spoiler. Not a big deal. I mean, not a big deal.
We knew.
And we had
I didn't know.
Caliber did not know.
Cal actually genuinely didn't know.
Nope.
No, he didn't know. I spoiled that for him.
So sorry.
It's all right.
But you know what? I think it's better content.
Strike one.
If we just call him who he is.
Strike one.
Who he is. And then, of course, episode 8, Akaba's Himika, the introduction really of her. The Leo Dual Chairwoman. School, the LDS Trio introduction, and we have kind of a little bit of a mini tournament, if you will, to see what's going to happen to the Yusho Dual School. So really, really cool stuff. We got some great, great conversations ahead. Before we begin, I believe Pete, there's a chance Pete will be joining us in like 30 minutes. He's at PT, yeah.
There's a chance.
There's a chance, so hopefully
he
can.
No.
Did he? Oh, did he say no?
Oh, no. No, wait. You might be right.
No, I think he said maybe there's a chance. Yeah.
A
think
chance.
He said maybe.
He did say, that's my bad. That's
no,
my
you're bad. Good. Calibro, how are you doing today, my man?
Doing pretty good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great, dude. I'm literally doing great. Nick T, how are you doing?
Great. Dude, I'm doing excellent tonight.
Good, man. And Dredge.
I'm doing good.
I'm lost in the sea. I'm lost in the sea, man. Lost in the sea.
I'm lost in the sea. Well, I am doing well. I hope everybody watching is doing well. I hope you guys are having a good Wednesday, a good middle of the week. This podcast, of course, will be serving kind of as that hump day. You're through most of the week, and you just have Thursday, Friday, easy enough. Before we get to that big, beautiful weekend, huge thank you to everybody that donated last episode when we talked about episodes 5 and 6. Huge thank you to Dark Emperor J, Axel Hero, Sean Gilbride, Ice Aiden, Colin Cleaves, That Man 666, Goose, Pick Rick, Fwee Weep, and Electric Kevin. Huge thank you to everybody there. If you are interested in donating, it is never requested or expected. Of course, you will have your message automatically read and discussed whether it pertains to the show or not. Two ways to do it. The link in the description. We do get a much larger percentage from that link. We get about 95% of donations through the link. Or the feature right here on YouTube, the Super Chat feature, which also definitely supports the channel. So either way you're comfortable, it doesn't matter if you do anyway. It is incredibly appreciated. Never expected. I am just grateful that you are here making us a part of your Wednesday nights, Thursday mornings, wherever you are in the world. We're going to start with episode 7. I know 7 and 8 have a little bit of interconnection, but I want to start with episode 7. Well, actually, you know what? Before we get to the individual episodes, you can see I thought this one through. Nick T, I'll go to you. How are you feeling about Arc 5 overall now with a little bit more world building that we saw here in episode 7 and 8?
I'm really liking it. I'm really, like, I feel kind of, like, invested in the story that they're building here. And I kind of like that it's a bit of a, like, a, not, I don't want to say a slow burn, but, like, they haven't, and we're 8 episodes in, and they really haven't given us any info on, like, exactly what's going on here. And I really like that. Like, this slow burn of introducing characters and building the world around us has been a really fun journey, especially with, the character and, you know, the unnamed character that we met the past couple episodes, who I think is really cool. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying it a lot. And I'm enjoying the duel style as well, like the action duels and all that good stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. Dredge, 2 more episodes. These, to me, always when I look back at Arc 5, especially Episode 7. Episode 7, to me, was a bit of a turning point with Arc 5 where I was enjoying it. Episode 7, I was like, wow, they just added a whole new layer here. I am now really invested in this storyline. Dredge, what were your thoughts here coming out of 7 and 8?
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with you. It's as I've said, it's been good, not great so far. Just because, again, you have to build characters up. But meeting this character, the mystery, seeing him XZ summon, kind of the aura that he has. And then, again, in Episode 8, getting to see Akiba Reiji, another character that we wanted more of. So, like, it's right like as we were asking at the end of Episode 6 what we wanted to see, you know, plot development, you know, more Akiba Reiji. We get both those things. We're introduced to a new character of Akiba Reiji's mother, who's the chairwoman of LDS, it sounds like. Not the president, though, I believe, right? She's the chairwoman, not the president. I don't think we've met the
chairwoman, yeah.
The president of LDS yet, which obviously that'll be more important. I will say, to add on to Pete isn't here. Pete was someone who thought Sora was a little sketchy. Sora in the mm-hmm. 8 specifically was sketchy again. You know, once there was a duel, he had like that look on his face again, like he's up to something.
He's always got that look on his face.
He does have that look.
But he mixed the ice cream so innocently in Episode 8.
That's true.
Yeah, it was fun.
That didn't help his case.
Okay.
That was him. He was trying to fake you out. Did not do a good job.
All right, that's fair.
And then we get this 3-on-3 duel, it sounds like, or it's just 3 solo duels. I think it's going to end up being 3 single duels, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
But that being said, I'm excited to see where that goes. We have an XZ specialist, a synchro specialist, and a fusion specialist. So really excited that we're, you know, as someone who plays Master Duel and sees different Sun mechanics go on all the time, it's going to be fun to see each one, you know, in a show that they weren't originally started in. So excited to see that. More the best at the end, though, I have to say, Akiba Reiji got way too much freaking hair because his hoodie is just like 3 feet above his head. Like, you see him in disguise at the end of 8, and I'm looking at him like, this is the most obvious. Like, clearly this guy is like, looks so sketchy. Like, what are we doing?
What do you think he's
up
to? His
hood's up here.
What do you think he's up to at the end? He ends Episode 8. What do you think he's up to?
Yeah, I mean, I could think of one or two things. He's either going to Yusho school to see something about that, or to, like, you know, almost undercover watch the duels or something like that. But I could be wrong. We'll kind of see. I feel we'll talk more about that later. But yeah, overall, 7 and 8 were better than the first 6 just because now we're building it up. So I'm very excited to see where it goes. Excited to see these next duels. And, you know, more Akiba Reiji, more now spoiled but had an idea, Yuto, who did look a lot like Yuya. I think we'll talk about that, obviously. But clearly was not Yuya. So we'll see kind of how that goes.
Yeah, no, very cool. And of course, we'll get into the specifics. I'm interested to touch on the XZ summoning, which not mm-hmm. brand new to people like Nick T and Calibre, because it was featured in Vrains to a degree. But obviously, it will be, as you can probably assume, featured much more frequently in Arc 5 from the early get-go. You know, right. Versus how it was in Vrains. But Calibro, are you kind of in agreement with Nick T and Dredge here, 7 and 8, just continuing to build out this world for you?
Yeah, honestly, after I watched Episode 7, I was like, all right, I'm here. Like, I'm good. Yeah. I'm ready to watch the show. Like, I felt like it was a turning point, at least in my head. Like, all right, there's stuff going on, and this is just like another added, like, plot line, and this early on, like, adding more characters, and then in Episode 8, you know, you add Reiji's mother, and like, they keep adding on these characters who have at least this image now of, like, you know, mystery, or like in Reiji's mom's case, like a villainous personality. Like, you're getting all these people in here, and I think they're doing a good job of it. Like, I think these two episodes really kind of brought me in more.
Yeah, cool. Nick T, obviously, we got to talk about your boy Shingo. I remember there were a few people that, when it happened in Episode 7, they said he got frame-mogged, right? Yuto comes into the warehouse and just completely blows him away in this duel. What were kind of your perceptions on Shingo?
I wouldn't say – I mean, he was definitely mogged, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. But I don't know about frame-mogged. But because, yeah. But anyway, yeah, I am so on the fence about Shingo, because obviously he's a scumbag. Obviously he's not like an actual great duelist, but like I don't know. I think he's really funny. Like, I think that this charming Chad character, who's also like a spoiled rich daddy's boy who fakes his injuries.
Oh, and, that father. That pissed me. Oh gosh.
Yeah, whose dad sucks. And also like. Has cool cards that he can play well, but also like is just really not a great duelist and keeps losing. Like, so he's like just a character of parallels, and I think he's so funny. So like, I like him. I like him.
Yeah, I, you know, sure. Cal, what did
he's
you
full
think?
Of, he's full of contradictions. He's full of contradictions.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, and you know what? You see that in his deck too, right? Like he's using a different deck in this episode. That might be something that, you know, is kind of consistent with him. You know, we'll see. But like, yeah, full of contradictions. That's a good way to sum him up. Cal, what did you think of Shingo in these two episodes?
So I feel like he's easy to just dislike.
Yeah.
Because as Nick T was saying, like, he's kind of cocky, even though he's not good. And like, he thinks he's the man, but like, he has these basically a posse of cheerleaders walking around behind him, like hyping him up. Like, I don't know. You said that I was Shingo, so I feel like I have to like him.
I never said that.
How messed up was that? That's so.
You compared them for sure.
You have.
All right, go on.
And if you were comparing us just because we were both good looking, like I get that.
That's what I said. Yeah. That's the only connection I saw.
Well, that was my main connection, right? I thought you guys
were main connection. So what were the other connections besides the main one?
So I think the other one had to be that they were always kind of in the action, right? Shingo's always involved in the action. He's got a pretty major role to play in the story. And I feel like you're always there. And that's a good thing, by the way. It's like, oh,
thanks. That
hangout at Weir's, you know, 10 years ago. Yeah, Caliber was there. I'm sure he remembers. Oh, that party at, you know, Russo's back in high school. Caliber was there.
Definitely
he
there.
Might not remember much, but he was there.
I was there.
You know, and so I feel like that's kind of the other comparison. Not only the you know, good-lookingness perception that they have in their own worlds, but the fact that they're just involved in everything.
Fair enough.
Okay. Wow. That's actually a pretty good explanation.
That was the best save he's had all year.
Yeah. Crazy. It's well done. That's all I got. I agree with them. I really like the episodes. I think, like I said before, after watching 7, like I watched it at lunch today at work and I was like, yep. Like I see why like the beginning of this show you've said is like really good.
Yeah. 7's the episode for me. And like, if 7 is one, now there's a couple of other like really good episodes that are going to be happening over the next span. And who knows? I mean, for some of you guys, maybe for the rest of the show. Like, and by the way, I do think there are good episodes scattered even towards the end parts of the show. And you know, I think that's going to be one of my fascinating things, not as I'm like rewatching it, how I'm going to change my mind on things personally or reinforce my thoughts on things. But also how you guys are going to feel. I mean, we might leave Arc 5 where one of you guys say it's the best Yu-Gi-Oh! Series you've watched. And there's nothing wrong with that. Wow. I mean, everybody has their own opinion. So I'm not 100% sure how you guys will feel as the story goes on. And I think that's going to be fun, not just for me. I think it'll be fun for the people watching. I think it'll be fun for you guys as well. I'm very, very excited just to hear how opinions and sentiments change and develop as the story continues. Caliber, I'll keep it with you for one second. Obviously, we have an Xyz user here in Yuto. We know Yuya is going up against an Xyz user from the LDS trio. And as Dredger already pointed out, we have an Xyz, Synchro, Fusion. How do you feel? You've got to remember, up to this show, Lynx did not exist. So how do you feel about, like, we're only 8 episodes in, and it feels like they're really making a concentrated effort to like show off all of the extra deck mechanics in the game up until this point, which is different than a lot of Yu-Gi-Oh! Shows.
I love it. And I think it's because I've never, like, I haven't played the game enough to where I know exactly how all the summoning mechanics work. Like, I can figure them out from watching the show, but like, I've never actually physically played the game to do it. So watching them kind of go one by one through them, but not in like a tutorial way, it's kind of like, oh, these guys specialize in this and now you're dueling against them. It's not like, all right guys, when you see this, what do we do, and like do something like that. Like, it's actually a good way to explain like the summoning mechanics without making it feel like a tutorial. So I kind of like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Dredge, you alluded to it earlier, you're the only other person here who plays Master Duel. So I would say plays the game in a at least casual way. How do you feel about it?
I like it. I think it adds variety. It keeps you on your toes as a viewer. Watching multiple Yu-Gi-Oh! Shows, usually you have an idea of where they're going to go. You learn a summoning mechanic, and it's used throughout the entirety of the show. Other than, you could argue, Vrains, which uses a lot as well. Even DM, it's tribute. It's really just tributes, some rituals, and some fusions. Then GX, it's the primary method is fusion, which is used by almost everybody. Then we get to 5Ds. We see just synchros for the most part. Zexal, I haven't got that far, but based on what I could tell, it's mostly just XZs. Mm-hmm. There could be some rituals and maybe some fusion there. But ideally, when you have multiple mechanics and you want to advertise them all, as a just broad spectrum Yu-Gi-Oh person, I'd be like, oh shoot, this show's got all the summonings. I have to watch this. Maybe my favorite cards in it. Is this going to be an XZ? Is this going to be a fusion duel? They do multiple in one duel. I think it adds a lot of variety, and I enjoy it personally. Even I think more so because I understand them all. I think if you don't understand all the summoning mechanics, and as Kalsa, they're not really doing a tutorial, which could be good or bad, because if you don't know how they work, that could be frustrating as well. But for me, I've enjoyed it. I like not knowing what's coming next. I like that we're starting it. You know, I do know some things about this show, that we have different arcs of this show. So we'll see more of those things as we move around. But yeah, I like it. I think it's great for the show overall.
Cool. Yeah, I'm trying to like remember how I felt, when I was watching this show for the first time. I can tell you this, even as you guys were talking there, I think what they did with Arc 5 in this sense was masterful. I think it was very, very smart. And I really question why it's not something that existed in the other main game Yu-Gi-Oh! Shows. I can't really look at Rush because that's a separate game. But why it didn't exist in, like, Zexal and Vrains. I mean, Vrains, I know, did get to most of the mechanics, not pendulums. Yeah. But you've got to remember, the first synchro was Revolver versus Windy. What was that, episode, like, 73? I mean, it was definitely the second half of the show. The first XZs, I think, is in, like, the late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. So it's not like those were mechanics that exist. You know, you had to get through a long period of time. I never understood why they were so, outside of Arc 5, hesitant showing off other mechanics, even if they didn't want it to be at the forefront early on and consistently throughout the show. Because if you're getting Yu-Gi-Oh! Fans or players to watch, wouldn't you want to advertise all of the different mechanics that your game has? I think the answer to that would be yes. And so I think the way that they handled Arc 5 right from the get-go, the inclusion of all the mechanics, really, really well done. And that is something where if we get like a Yu-Gi-Oh! 9 and it's a new Master Rule anime, I really, really hope they look at Arc 5 and say, that's what we're going to do. We're showing off every single mechanic. Every single deck is going to have a theme, but it's not going to be one singular theme. And I think that would be very, very cool for hopefully another show in the future. But yeah, I mean, Nick T, I don't know if you kind of agree with me or and Caliber and Dredger. I think it's a wonderful thing that they did with Arc 5.
I think it's excellent. What I really particularly like is because it's not just about Yu-Gi-Oh! Showing off the summoning methods, these summoning methods, I mean, and I know it's going to appear more as the show goes along, but they've already made it pretty evident that summoning methods are integral and central to the theme of the show.
Right.
It's not just like, oh, this is this show's summoning method. The various summoning methods have focuses, like different focuses where it's like, oh, this one hasn't been taught, or it's like, and I know it becomes more important, but the fact that two characters that have shown up like have like sort of introduced this new thing that people are not familiar with, or like their focus, it's like these specialties. Everybody's got their specialty, whether it's Yu-Gi-Oh with Pendulum, unnamed character with Xe. You know, it's a thing, and I think that's really cool, and I think they do a really good job with it. Sort of also. Yes, it's a surprise, but they kind of ease us into it in a sense where it's like they don't explain it, but they make it fairly clear what's going on with that summoning mechanic. And I can't remember exactly this. I don't know if it's related to the summoning mechanic exactly, but I remember it had to be episode 4 or 5, I think, when one of the the three young kids were watching the duel between Sora and Yuya, I forget whose card did something it must have been one of Yuya's cards used in a slightly different way than it had been the duel before, and they explained it in a way that didn't feel like I was stupid. You know, like, or like a child. They like did a little explanation as to why it worked a little different, and they moved on quick. And I'm like, cool, got it, let's go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think they
And I really like that.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's very well said. I remember that was one of the things, and I'm always trying to think of how I felt when I was first watching this show that I really liked, and that was certainly different than 5Ds and Zexal, and of course ended up being different than in Vrains, where like... We got all these mechanics early on. Like, that's awesome. Love that.
Yeah.
And that they were integral to the story, which is a great part that you brought up, a great point that you brought up. Calibro, Yuto, I mean, listen, I spoiled the name for you. It is what it is.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, you would have learned it at some point anyway. Obviously,
I would have learned the ending of Game of Thrones by watching those movies.
Well, that's fair. Obviously, the most.
Oh wow! Wait! I gotta interrupt.
What? Oh,
we got a crazy donut.
Oh my god!
I gotta interrupt. My bad.
Did I miss that?
Rubens, dude. It's been a while. Listen, you know what, dude? I sometimes get like emotional and sentimental whenever I see like old names. Rubens has, I know, is like a big lurker. And the one thing that I have to say, I always say shout out to the lurkers, right? We'll have 50, 55, 60 people watching, and there will maybe be
we love our lurkers.
20 active people in chat. That means, you know, 70% of people watching are lurking. And I never know with lurkers if they're still lurking. You know what I mean? And that always makes me, it always, that's why I always get like very, you know, emotional whenever I see an old name, because I'm like, I'm so happy that this person who's been so kind to me and has changed my life still watches. Rubens, I'll read it. Thank you for the $200 donation. Ooh. If we can get some hearts and hypes in chat for Rubens, thank you so much, my friend. Thank you for using the link. Hey, Dylan and everyone, it's been a while, but just know I'm still here lurking and enjoying the videos. Yeah, no, he's a lurker, man. The guy cracks me up. Thank you so much, Rubens. I know things are rough.
Yeah.
With no Yu-Gi-Oh! 9, but keep going and keep up the good work. There's lots of people like me still lurking and watching you. Thank you so much, dude. Man, I never really like have words whenever I get a very, very generous donation like that. But thank you guys for all the hearts and hypes in chat for Rubens. Rubens is someone who has been, I mean, that's a name that I'm sure the three of you recognize instantly.
Of course.
Because I feel like every few months or every like once a year they just do a massive donation, and it just like it just blows my mind. Thank you, Rubens. You know what, I honestly needed to hear that more than you probably realized, because things have been tough. I mean, I'm not gonna lie about it, things absolutely have been tough. You know, with no new series, not just for me, but I'm sure for the guys here as well. You know, we miss doing the Wednesday night shows covering a new Yu-Gi-Oh! We hope that this fills the void. I'm having a lot of fun with it early on. I hope the guys are enjoying the new show to them.
Oh, yeah.
And, we're going to keep trying to make the best content we can, Rubens. And listen, this is not what you want to hear, but I'm going to say it. 302 days until Jump Festa.
God.
And you just don't know, man. You just don't know. Rubens, I actually have a big copium video coming out tomorrow about why Yami Yugi being on a booster set pack, Chaos Origins, could be a sign that maybe we will get a DM reboot. Now, I say at the beginning of the video, it is a massive, massive copium take, but it does kind of give those vibes, right? I mean, you know, maybe a little bit. First time in 20 years on a pack cover. First time in 20 years. We'll see. Rubens, thank you so much, my man. You know, fun discussion video tomorrow. Because that's all that's left. You know, people say, what are you doing? You're making a video like that. That's all that's left. What else is left? I mean, seriously. if not for these sorts of discussion, what else is left? At that point, pack up the channel, delete it, move on. We're not doing that, man. We're hanging out. We're going to keep chilling, and we're going to keep hoping. And we're going to, you know, do what we can. Rubens, hopefully it's entertaining for you. Thank you so much, my man. I appreciate you. Helps me out tremendously. Much love to you, my friend. Thank you. Yeah, wow. Awesome
Hell yeah,
stuff.
Dude, that's crazy.
I was not expecting
thank
that.
Thank you, Rubens. Appreciate it. Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it was...
thank you.
That's eyes, worth it.
For
yeah.
those sorts of donations, always interrupt, yeah. please. Thank mm-hmm. you, guys, which you guys always do very well with, so thank you. Appreciate you so much, Rubens. Yeah, I'm trying to think where we were.
You were
going to
ask Cal something.
I was going to ask, Rubens, again, Rubens, thank you so much. I was going to ask Cal about Yuto. Mm-hmm. Spoiled his name, a man in mystery. I mean, what did you make of him?
So I thought he was very interesting. It was very cool kind of how he just came in here, and odd that he just kind of went in and protected Yuzu. Kind of felt like he felt like he knew her and she had no idea who he was. Then she thought he was Yuzu, and I mean Yuya, and was like, it was kind of all over the place. Like, nobody knew who he was, but they just thought he was Yuya for some reason. Like, even looking at them, I don't think they look that similar.
No, that was always like a meme during Arc 5, that, like, they really don't look similar, and everybody thought that, yeah.
Like, if it was the exact same face design with different hair, okay. Like, you got me there. Like, I can see it.
No, but
like,
it was definitely different, yeah.
They pull it down, and they're like, Yuya? And then you see the person, and I just was like, no, that's not you. Don't worry. But no, definitely interested. And like I said, just that whole episode really kind of got me locked in for what's to come. So,
yeah, no, I think it sets the stage. And now, like, you know, it was always up until like episode 6. It's all like, I remember my thought was like, I want more Reiji. I want to see Reiji. I want more Reiji. And then you get this character. And then you get episode 8, it's like, okay, now I want more Reiji, and I want more of this guy. So whenever you can add more characters like that to a show that drive up general intrigue and just, like, anticipation waiting for them to make a move again, I think it's a really, really good sign. Dredge, we've got 3 duels coming up. This LDS trio, as they're kind of known as. How do you think this is going to, like, play out between our, duelists here, Yuya, of course, leading the way. How do you forecast this playing out, man?
I think it's going to be your typical, you know, you win the first one, you lose the second one. or in a case of you lose the first one, then win the next 2. I'd have to assume, if it is true that obviously Yuya is going first, I think Yuya wins. I think Yuzu loses, and I think Sora comes in as your closer and locks it in. Yep. I'm not sure if they're going to want the mirror match of Fusion versus Fusion for Sora. I think Synchros are a better matchup against Fusion than Fusion on Fusion, personally. But we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think it's going to – whenever it's a best 2 out of 3 – I think you do a disservice to win 2-0. Almost in every show or you know, anime that I've watched, you know, Haikyuu is one that does a lot of, you know, best of 3 sets. It's very rare that a team wins the 2 sets and, in the first 2, and that's it, you know. Takes away from plot, takes away from storytelling. So I do think we're going to get the 3 duels, and we will see all 3 characters duel. And unfortunately, I just think Yuzu will take the loss. Now, is it possible that Yuya takes a loss early on? I mean, I think you could do that.
But what if Yuzu's the closer? You don't think there's any chance Yuzu's the closer?
Yuzu's the closer, I will eat my words on this podcast in 7 days. I'm pretty confident I won't be doing that. But if I am wrong, I have no problem eating my words.
Well,
on that, especially
let me,
with the...
Let me say this to interrupt you. Next week, we are covering 9, 10, and 11, which will, cover the entirety of this best of... Just to reveal
that. I definitely can't wait to watch them before Wednesday night. I have to watch those beforehand then. All right, cool. Yeah, so that'll be good. We'll see all 3. So I presume each episode is a duel. So that's exciting.
Yep.
Should be fun to see. Yeah, I mean, I don't think Yuzu closes. I could be wrong. I mean, hey, you know, maybe I am. But I am excited to see, you know, how the Synchro Specialist, the XZ Specialist, the Fusion Specialist duels. And I want to see how much trouble these duels are for our characters. You know, is it, you know... going to be one of those like nail biters, or are we going to kind of feel pretty comfortable the whole time? So,
any chance they lose the school, Dredge?
Come on.
I mean,
it's a non-Z, as Calibro would say, you know, it's a non-Z.
Akiba Reiji's on his way. He's on his way for something.
Yeah, I don't think them getting the school
without it being a agreed upon merge. Like, for example, they already did your first little fake out where it was like, if Sora loses, Union Sora can't be the apprentice. Now Sora is the best friend, right? So, excuse me, there are ways, plot holes you can do in the wording. With this case, unless, you know, Yu Show School wanted to join with LDS, I don't think that's going to happen. Akuma Reiji, I really do hope we see a lot of him in these next three episodes. I'm more hyped for when we finally see Akuma Reiji duel. Yes. With this man's aura already, if there was a
staggering
Arc 5 deck I was going to make, as of right now, I would probably be leaning to make Reiji's, even without knowing what it is. just to be like, hey, I got Akuma Reiji deck. I'm hoping it's
that's
not
the kind of
I'm
aura he has.
Not, yeah, he's again, I have argued that there are just some characters, some of these Yu-Gi-Oh! Shows that have that Himothy in them, and he so far has been one. So yeah, I just really hope, I'm purposely not looking at Dylan as I talk right now in case he is smiling or laughing about, you know, Akuma Reiji's deck, because I don't want any spoilers on what it is. I have no idea what it is, which actually is pretty cool. So we'll see that hopefully, but I hope we don't have to wait too long. I would love to see him duel. Hopefully, I would hope before episode 15. You know, the are they still doing episode 13 episode arcs at this point? Is that technically
no? No.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not a thing. Okay, so
just Sevens and Go Rush had that. Yeah,
just Sevens and Go Rush. Yeah. So we'll see. I'm excited. Yeah, Akuma Reiji is him. These three duels will be fun to see, and the LDS trio. We'll see what they're really all about.
Your order is Yuya, Yuzu, Sora. That's the order of your prediction.
Yeah.
I mean, now, Yuya's a given. I mean, he's a given.
Yeah. Now, if I had to pick the other two based on that information, I really don't think. I don't think, especially what we just talked about, you're introducing all the new summon mechanics early on in the show. I don't think you want a mirror match in the final, which is fusion versus fusion. So I'm going to say the second duelist will be the fusion duelist for the LDS trio. And the third duelist for the LDS trio will be the synchro duelist. That's also what, if we need to make actual predictions.
Okay. Yeah. Cal Nick T, I mean, any disagreements there with the order or how this plays out? I mean, you know, this is a big little mini arc coming up right here for our team.
I agree with how Dredder thinks it's going to play out. Part of me is hoping that it doesn't play out like that. There's actually two things. Okay. There's two separate routes that I would love this show to take, and that's Yuya win, Sora lose, and then have a nail biter of a third duel with Yuzu, who might surprise us because we haven't really seen her do like a full duel yet, have we?
No, I mean, she dueled Yuya, but that was a very performative duel.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But she won.
And she won.
Which she won.
That's my
I
issue.
Would love
too.
To see
she
her like
already won a duel. That's,
she has already won a duel, but
Gallop
like,
girl.
Again, it's performative. Like, I would love to see her like show up, like, you know, step up to the plate and like win like a serious duel and be like, whoa, like, I thought they were going to lose it for sure. You know, I don't know. But the other route is with something that, to your question to Dredger, that maybe they do lose the school. Maybe that's not a permanent thing. Like, right now, there's some serious sentimental value to the school. Yusio founded it, disappeared, and now Yuzu's father is the, you know, principal, I guess. I don't know what you would call him.
Some goofy title.
But like, so like having, you know, this small school that even in like a reality thing, like sort of getting bought out or, you know, acquired, like this is like a reality of, you know, small private schools or like small businesses by like, this is a thing that happens. And I think seeing that play out in the show that way, and then the Yusho school trying to fight to regain either start a new school like with their own thing or like fight for their school to regain control, I think would be an interesting route following if they were to lose.
Cool. Yeah, no, I love it. Cal, your predictions going into this matchup.
So I think similar to Dredger, I think it's gonna go Yuya, Yuzu, and then Sora. I think it's gonna go win, loss, win. And I think it would be actually kind of cool where it's like they don't know that Sora uses fusion mainly, and it is a fusion on fusion. So I'm like, he gets the advantage because he kind of knows how the other guy is playing or whatever with the fusion summoning, and that's how, you know, he gains his advantage or whatever, and then proves himself to be like part of their team even more. And maybe Yuya will accept him as his friend one day, just so that he can probably break his heart later on. But I think similarly to Dredge, though, win loss win.
Cool. Yeah.
And Yuzu not being the closer, unfortunately.
It would be. I will say this. I mean, if she wins here, and it is the closer in Nick T's hypothetical, what a start. Beating the protagonist episode 2 and being the game 3 winner potentially here in this matchup. So
cool.
It would be. I mean, we'll see what happens, you know, which will be very, very exciting. Trying to think if there was anything else that was notable. I mean, you have Akiba Reiji talking to his mom, you know, in an interesting-ish scene there. Before we move on to any like donations or super chats that we might have, was there anything else that kind of caught your attention from a mystery point of view or a point of intrigue? I'll put it like that. In these two episodes, Nick T, anything?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
Sure, of course. Yeah, was there anything that like stood out to you from a point of intrigue from either of these two episodes? And by intrigue, I mean, just like I maybe you're theorizing something was said that you thought was notable, something like that.
I mean, a lot.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, especially 7. I feel like. Especially
yeah,
7.
I mean, having I'm just because they haven't introduced him, I'm just gonna for sake of the ease, I'm just gonna refer to him as Yuto because.
Yeah, just refer to him as Yuto. It's fine.
Okay. First of all,
because he spoiled it. Yeah.
Him recognizing Yuzu and then like he said something really mysterious about like not hurting her anymore.
I don't want to hurt you again or hurt her anymore. Yeah.
Right.
And then her getting these like flashes. She didn't see anything. They don't show us her seeing anything, but she kept flat like flashing. And that was odd. He disappeared into thin air. His moves had or his monsters had actual real world effects, even though there was no action duel taking place.
Right. Solid vision
no solid vision taking place. I mean, Yuto is right now the most interesting thing this show has to offer by far. I mean, it is wild.
I remember I was like, how chilling of a line is that? I don't want to hurt you again. And Yuzu has no idea who the hell this guy is. How chilling of a line. A lot.
Yeah, it was sick as hell.
It was a sick line. Judge.
Yuzu's had a bracelet on and it like blinked. I feel like
it did blink.
Yeah.
Right before Yuto, I think, disappeared. I forget, but that was interesting too. Just I think we should keep an eye on that as well. And as Nick T said, Yuto's definitely more is arguably the most interesting character. I'd argue Akiba Reiji also is interesting, but just the cold-hearted lines that Yuto was saying, and just that that look alike to Yuya, you know, the coming out of nowhere, disappearing, and he's also one thing we didn't talk about. He's looking for an LDS student. Clearly, he's looking for that little badge they have. He had one with him. So the question is, what LDS student is he actually looking for? Is he perhaps looking for Akiba Reiji? So there's that factor too that I'm hoping. I'm really hoping we get a Yuto Akiba Reiji interaction. I think that would be a lot of fun. So we have, again, as Nick T said, Yuto is the most, you know, he's like the Dos Equis guy, most interesting man in the world. You just got to know what he's doing. You want to know.
Yeah, no, it's I just remember, and I'm smiling so much because I really do remember the feeling of so early Arc 5 and being where you guys are and looking at like comments and forums and
the good
being
old
like,
days.
Yeah, right, when there was a show. Galabro, anything that you know, it could be regarding Yuto, any theories, or was there maybe anything else that like was not pointed out that really caught your eyes and caught your attention in this in these episodes?
So more theorizing about Yuto, there was two things I was thinking of. One is the bracelet I was going to bring up, like that glowing and him almost basically teleporting away. And it's like, is there some kind of power with that? Kind of like how Yuya's pendulum has this power where he like sees these images or whatever, that thing glows. And I don't know. I just feel like there's something going on with their jewelry there. And then the second one was if maybe Yuto and Sora are from the same place. Just because we don't really know where Sora's from.
Sure.
And kind of sus on him, and then this guy coming in and out of nowhere, just... I don't know. I wonder if it's connected. They're probably not. That's more of a far-fetched one for me. But the actual, like, jewelry with the bracelet and the pendulum around his neck, those, I think, like, that's kind of her, you know, millennium item, if you will.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well...
Yeah, anything?
There's, like, keywords that I remember hearing in conversations about the show that I just, like, can't exactly ignore.
Say it.
So, bracelet girls, and I know that's...
But how,
you know,
much...
I don't want to say too much for those who, but, like, and, like, the show's already pointing to this. I don't want to be like, oh, well, it's ruined for me because I know... Or, like, remember certain things.
We know. We don't,
we don't know how we get there, but also, like, the show is already currently pointing to things that I would have pieced together anyway.
Of course. Of course. Well, like, and also, origin... that's a term that I'm sure everybody here has heard me say. Or
yeah, exactly.
Chat say. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I probably heard it, but I probably ignored it.
Yeah. You boys and bracelet girls.
Okay. You boys and bracelet girls. And, right, the show is already, like, the. Yuzu's bracelet being a bracelet girls plural. There are other girls with these bracelets also pointing in the same direction as, oh, well, Sora is extremely unclear as to where he's from. Yuya looks, Yuto looks a lot like Yuya, extremely unclear where he's from or why he recognizes Yuzu, who does not recognize him, right? There's these things piecing together very, like, unfolding slowly, but piecing together quickly.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. No, and you should be. Yeah. And the puzzle pieces, right? You have a little bit more context than somebody who is blindly watching, but it's not enough context where you know how things play out.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that makes it almost even more, like, tantalizing because you know a little bit where you're more interested and it makes more sense, but you also don't know enough. And that's the part that's, like, tricky and annoying. So... Yeah,
that's exactly how I'm feeling.
Yeah. So it'll be fun to continue to watch, to analyze, to theorize. What do you make of Himeka Akaba striking a deal with Shingo's father, Nick T? It's very rare we get, you know, parents discussing things. And obviously Himeka, you considered her for your top 10 mom. She did not make the cut.
Yes.
So, that's why I go to you with any
honorable mention
comment about her.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought her up, actually, because she is attractive in a very scary, villainous way. An extremely scary way, because she's clearly powerful, right? She holds power over... There's a lot of... And what I really liked about that interaction is, like, there's some, like, low-key, like, politics in the show and acting, like, a councilman running for mayor who's trying to strike a deal with the chairman for a local, like, corporation dueling school is, like, so seedy. It's awesome. And, like, it's clear that she's not a stranger to this kind of deal where she's, like, she's just using her leverage to, like, get people to do what she wants, and that's sick.
Yeah. Mm. Caliber, do you concur? As a fellow mom enjoyer, right? I mean, you know.
What the hell? Bro, come on, man.
What? What did I say?
You said, what do you mean, what did you say? You know what you said.
Nick T, what did I say?
Yeah, wait, hey, Dill.
Oh, come on.
That can't be. No way.
No way that's a tech. That's the softest tech in the world. God.
It's soft as that.
It's like I touched him in soccer and he threw himself to the ground. I got a yellow card. What are we doing?
I don't even know what you want me to agree with.
I mean, the whole chat is saying
talking about him.
What? So I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know talking about her, but in what way are you asking me to agree with Nick?
Well, what did you make of her character? Like, did you find her to be intimidating?
Yeah, it's politics, man. She's using money to get whatever she wants.
Let's talk politics.
Money and power, baby.
We should start talking about that on the podcast, actually.
She's like, I'll give you a favorable result at the election if you let me do this. Okay.
But that's crazy. But that, Nick T, that's very unrealistic, right? That kind of stuff doesn't happen.
Never has ever happened, ever, yeah.
Judge, what do you make of it?
I think y'all are trolls. No, in all seriousness. I mean, you are, so that's just a true statement. But no, when it comes to Himeka Akaba, she has that, you know, scary, villain-esque look. Well, obviously, I don't know that we'll get to see her duel. I think I'd like to. I don't believe we will. But she has that villainous probably. But again, I don't think she wears the pants in that company. I think she's just a face for the president and Akaba Reiji, who are the real, you know, threats of LDS. I think she's a lot of talk. That's why she has her little LDS trio to come duel, and they're going to let her down, and then she's going to be all grumpy and sad. So she definitely has that intimidating look to her. She's mildly attractive. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that, it's just she's all right, you know.
Right.
So, did you hear anything I just said, or no?
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
I did.
What I say? Repeat it back to me.
You said that she's all right.
I mean, technically, yeah. All right, I'll give it to you. As I just watched Dylan staring down the whole time. Asks my freaking opinion.
I was trying to delete a spoiler comment in the chat, but I didn't. I wasn't able to. I didn't have it up on my phone. I usually don't have chat up, but I'm trying to have it up a little bit. When I'm not speaking, just in case.
Yeah,
anybody
I've been trying to delete them too. There's not too many, but some people like to write stuff.
So yeah, I mean, I think people do it in unintentionally.
A lot of the times, I do believe it's not. They're just excited for what comes next.
Yeah, it just is what it is. Sure. But that's why I was looking down. But I was still half listening while I
you
was.
You were struggling, dude. You were there for. I was yabbing for a good two minutes there. That's crazy.
Well, I opened my phone and then the stream link. I couldn't find it on mobile, and I was like, I can't click it on here because. Yeah, it's a mess, dude.
I'm sorry, man. My sorry.
It's all right. It's all right. It's all right. Do we have any donation super chats? See how maybe people are feeling about these episodes, or just anything that's on your mind. You know, we are always, of course, down to talk about. I also want to let you boys know I've made this decision, and I guess I'll be letting everybody know, even though I had announced it earlier in the week, in regards to the Chronicles. I know the initial plan was for us to do the podcast when the Chronicles portions finished. So like when Charmers finished next month in March, we would watch Charmers and then do a podcast on it. I have made the decision not to cover the Charmers in any more capacity on this channel. So I'm just giving you guys a heads up and people that are watching that maybe were wondering about that. We're not. And things might change with that, but as of now, we're not going to be covering it on the channel. So just wanted to touch on that. But
thank you for the update.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
I'm not even going to lie to you, Dill. I kind of forgot that existed.
Yeah, this is more important to me, actually.
I genuinely forgot about the show.
I actually don't know if you're trolling. I feel like you are.
I'm literally not trolling because we started doing this. I completely forgot we were actually going to do something for it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, it is what it is. No big deal. And like, you know, maybe my mind will change on that in the future. And if it does, you know, I'll let you know and we'll cover it. But as of now, there's not going to be any Chronicles content on the channel here. So just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah.
All right, boys. Any super chats, any link donations? I think I see one on the link. I'll start it off on the link.
Yeah, start with the link.
Dark Emperor J with the $2 donation. Thank you, Dark Emperor J. Random late question. I forgot to ask a romance question before Valentine's Day, so I'll ask now. Let's say your partner had a bad day. What is the first thing you'll do to make them feel better? What a nice question. So I would try to bad day them. To try to flip the table. No, I'm kidding.
I'm completely kidding.
Do not do that.
Uno
do
reverse.
Not do
Uno
that.
Reverse.
I am completely kidding.
You thought your day was bad with you.
Yeah, right. No, my thing is, will always be you know, usually I'm very lucky and usually Ivrea does dinner, like makes dinner. So my first thing will be like, I'll do pickup or I'll make like one of the limited meals that I'm able to make right now.
Well, what can you pancakes cook? What do you cook?
I can make a good breakfast for dinner. Pancakes, eggs, bacon. I do very well with that. And then the Kraft mac and cheese. But Kraft mac and cheese, and you get a little bit of like chicken breast. And so you put some chicken breast in the mac and cheese.
How are you cooking your chicken breast?
Well, I get it. If I'm going to do that, I'll get it like pre-cooked at a Costco.
To put it in mac and cheese, though, I would say that's a safe bet. I wouldn't trust him putting raw chicken into crap.
No. I understand what you're saying, Nick T. You could argue that making breakfast is cooking. I don't think I'd argue making Kraft mac and cheese and taking cooked chicken and putting it in cooking. But that's just my opinion. But again,
I don't know. Kraft mac and cheese
is preparing a meal.
Preparing dinner.
It might not be cooking.
Preparing dinner. Okay. Yes.
Preparing dinner. I will concur to that.
That's
term.
Fair. Yep. I'll agree. I'll like allow that. Preparing for dinner. Objection sustained. We're good.
Preparing dinner.
There we go. We
like that'll be the big thing. And then, you know, Ivrea also from time to time likes having a sweet treat if she's having a bad day. That's what she refers to it as. So I'll run out and grab like Brewster's, which is an ice cream place by us, and get something for her. So that's usually the thing. And then if there's any other like house related chores that she wanted to do, you know, I'll always ask what I can do to take things off her plate. But she also knows that like if she wants to spend most of the day like in bed, in the bedroom, hanging out, like I'm never gonna like bother her about it or make her feel bad about it. So I think just, you know, the comfort that you can give your partner about like, hey, you can be your authentic self. If you're not feeling well, like I got you, like there's no pressure on anything else. I think that comfort goes a long way, but that is my answer. I'm excited to hear the other gentleman's answers here. Dredge, we call him Experienced Dredge. We'll start with you, man.
He has to add something to it every time. No, if my wife's having a bad day, which between January and April, she's very busy. So she's really stressed. So I just try to, something that you do, I do tend to do the chores. I tend to cook, actually cook. I tend to basically, as you said, take things off her plate and always just be there for her. She likes to like, you know, relax and stuff. Also, I'll bring her like all her snacks and water upstairs if she's upstairs studying. I'll just go check in on her. I know she's, you know, doing stuff. And I'm like, hey, how are you? You doing okay? Just things like that, being there for if she needs anything. Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, not every day is a great day. Even though, you know, at the end of every show you do, Dill, I hope you have an amazing day, right? Not every day is a great day, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There are ups and downs to life. There are the ebbs and flows, as they say. So just, you know, when you have a partner, your goal is, you know, the goal is for both of you to be able to provide 100%, but sometimes you can't. You got to pick up some slack, and the best thing you can do is just support your partner in any way that they feel helps them. So, yeah, just being there for Nicole when she needs me, and then that's I think that's all that anyone can really do. So,
love it, Nick T.
Well, there's a few things. I mean, obviously, I completely agree with a lot of what both you and Roger said. One thing is that, like, at least for me, and I think this sentiment applies to a lot of people, is that when, like, someone you know is, like, either had a bad day or is hurting in some way, your initial reaction is to not smother them, but, like, try to do something, like, either with or for them and, like, provide them with a lot of attention. And sometimes that's not the best thing. Sometimes you need someone who's having a bad day needs a little space. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can take something off their plate, right? Like, when Nick's having a bad day, sometimes I just give her a little bit of space at first. I'll go do the dishes. I'll do this or that. Come back, you know, like prepare dinner. Give her the space she needs. Put on a show she likes. Whatever it is that in that moment, because I think not every bad day is the same, right?
Yeah.
So I think whatever is needed in that moment is what I, you know, I try to assess the best what's needed in that moment and then execute it. Sometimes it's a little bit of space at first because you don't want to smother someone who's already having a bad day. It's only going to lead to some kind of argument or like make it worse. And you don't want to make it worse, even if you're trying to make it better. But yeah, you know, definitely. I think I fully agree with the taking things off of your partner's plate when they're going through it.
Yeah. And Cal Breezy, maybe the most important man to give this speech. What's on your mind, man?
I doubt she's watching us. So.
Considering there's literally, I think 95% of the things you could do have already been said.
Yeah, you don't have much to say.
I'm gonna echo you guys here, but I do think like it's so situational. Like Nick T said, like sometimes like, they just want a little bit of space to go sit down, read a book, listen to music, just kind of disassociate with everything for an hour or two. Like, just let it happen. Other times, it's like, they're having a bad day. They just want a hug. They just want you to hold them for a couple minutes. And then it's like, all right, I feel better. Let's go have a cup of coffee and I'll make food, whatever. Making dinner, doing whatever you got to do. And then, like you said, the chores, like doing things that they normally might have to ask you for, or you might be like, yeah, I'll get to it. You just do it before it's even asked. And then that way they don't even have to look and bother about it. It's already done. And, you know, like you said, taking things off their plate. Just make the day a little easier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great question, Dark Emperor Jay. That turned into a little dating segment there, a little dating advice, which we love. That's what, you know, I always look forward to Dark Emperor Jay's random questions. I really do. Thank you so much, my man. I believe we also have a channel membership. Is that correct, Cal?
Yeah, but we also have a donation before that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm missing it then.
No, it's fine. Don't worry about it. I got it. All right. We got a $5 donation from Sean Gilbride.
Sean Gilbride! That's right.
And before I even read this, I do want to say Sean sent me some of the pictures from the event that he went to.
Same.
I think it's like the prom thing that he went to. Awesome. Looked like such a good Sean. I hope you had a great time. And Sean said, I've still got Knight to Shine very much on my mind. If you follow me anywhere, including YouTube, you can see some of my antics.
Said it to Sean earlier because he came into my Clone Hero stream that I did earlier today and said a very similar message. I'm sure, even though it was five nights ago, I know that feeling. I think we've probably I call it post-event depression, where like you'll leave a concert or, you know, party on Lynch Road, right, Russo. And it's just like such an amazing time. And you're like, man, does this night have to end? Does this party have to end? You know, the sun is the sun's coming up, big Len's walking down the stairs, and you know you gotta go. And it's like, man, I don't want to leave this party, but the party is leaving you. And you're just walking back home and you're like, man, this is why we live life, man. This is why we do life, to drink Four Loko in a cold basement. And and it's just an amazing, amazing memory. So I think we've all been there, right, Cal, with this post-event depression?
Yeah, when I got back from Japan, I had post-Japan depression for a few weeks for sure. So I get the sentiment.
That's similar to probably how I felt leaving Russo's a couple of...
I think that was a different kind of depression you were experiencing leaving Russo's. Yeah.
No, Sean, listen, we're so happy for you, man. Keep killing it. The next one's going to be here before you know it. And Sean is an inspiration, man. Get involved with community events. Get involved with community in general. We need more of that and less like social media. Awesome stuff, Sean. Thank you so much for the super chat, man. I appreciate
it. Yes, dude. We love that.
Yeah, I love that. Love you, man. Thank you.
Want me to read the next one, Kel?
Go ahead.
All right. We have 10 months of Raw Yellow membership from It's Mad Kuroi.
Kuroi. Yeah. Thank you, Kuroi. The Chaz apologist. Thank you, Kuroi.
I'm not even going to say that because it's at the end of their... another month of support. Looking forward to more content, collabs, and the GX watch along. Cheers from the number one Menjome apologist.
Sunda!
I love it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much, Kuroi, for the membership. I think it's really, really cool that, you know, you have been here for 10 months supporting me in this sort of way. And it means the world. And, you know, GX watch alongs, we will continue to watch GX. We got one tomorrow, 66 through 70. In fact, we ended... the last GX watch along yesterday with the Hell Kaiser episode. So 66, 70. We'll see so we're watching 66. We're watching 67. We're watching 68. We're watching 69. And we are watching 70. So very, very excited to see more Manjome Sunda, who Dredge, he has joined the Whites. He has joined the Society of Light. And he is now.
I do remember that actually pretty well.
He's now donning the white jacket. Yeah. So we'll.
It is tough as hell.
Wait, Sayu, right? Sayu.
Sayu is the leader of that group. Now, Nick, would you say his? Would you say his fit is tough? TUFF.
Yeah. No, I would. I would. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like it. I think it also looks equally like even more tough on him than it does anyone else. Because like when you think of Chaz, at least when I do, I think of the black, right? I think of the black jacket, the black hair. Yeah. And white is, of course, such a shock tone change. And at the core of GX, you have these elements, right, man? You've got the darkness. You've got the light. You've got the light trying to overtake the darkness. And then in the last season, you have the darkness trying to overtake everything. And it's such a beautiful thing. And you kind of have that symbolism very early on with Sayu taking Manjome as the first person that he grabs really under his control from Duel Academy after failing with Judai. This, you know, black color character in Manjome that you think of the black hair and the black jacket transforming into the white styling. I think even like that symbolism there is really, really cool when you think about how it ties in to the overall message of the season and, of course, the balances of light and dark in Yu-Gi-Oh! GX. So there's my little GX thing.
You just went off there. That was sick.
Thank you.
No, I like that. That was a, I'm like, no, like you just like went into it. I'm like, oh, he's spitting. This is
no, I mean, listen, I think a misconception people have. I think the two biggest is they think I don't like Manjome and they think I don't like Crow. And neither of those are true. I think I like both of them. No, there's no. Maybe at one point I did not like Crow like 8 or 9 years ago, but I have no problem with him anymore.
Sure.
but it's stuff like that over the last 5 years I've never been able to lose the reputation that I dislike Crow, because every time I say it, Nick T or one of you guys will be like, yeah, sure. So it almost comes off like off stream I'm saying, oh, I can't stand Crow, dude. Crow's off, which is not at all true.
Yeah, it's more on stream that you take like sneaky little shots, and then you say, "Oh, we don't. I don't dislike the guy."
I think Yuga has become my new Crow. How about that?
That's definitely true.
Yeah, it's definitely.
And I like. I'll preface this by saying I like Yuga. I'll look right into the camera and say into this microphone, I like Yuga. No. I like
the reason you're doing this more so too is because if Pete was here, Pete would be already losing it. So. Yeah. Pete, you do it purposely to troll Pete, I swear.
Oh, no. I really do like him as a character. You know, if he had to win a duel for my survival, I'd call my mom and say goodbye. But
No. You went there, so now we got to do it. You decided to go there, so now we have to do it. You know that he's clutch. It's very simple that he's clutch. You should have told me. If he had to like win this duel, or you like you're just gonna get a bruise on your arm, bro. You're getting like 12 bruises on your arm, even though it's that. But if it's actually for life or death, he locks in. He is clutch. He's the main character. That's what he does. Is he a great duelist? No. Does he win duels he probably should? No. But when it's time for him to actually win, he locks in. And you saying that you would have to call your mom, you're full of it. That's so BS, and you know it.
Thank you for that, Dredger. Thank you.
Like, bro, I'm glad you said it. Tried to do that. I'm like, nah, I gotta be the Pete of this combo. Look, like, there's no way.
Dredge, tell him what's up. If I'm picking from all the protagonists that I know, he's getting picked last. That's all I'm saying.
I think Dredge would agree with you. Dredge would agree with you.
I mean, that's not an argument. Like,
that's not the argument, though.
Yeah, the argument is if Dylan's basically saying that if it was a clutch duel on the line, that Yuga has no chance, and that's just so incorrect. That's all it is. Yeah.
No, I would just text my mom goodbye. That's all. I don't.
Yeah, and you'd be wrong for it, because then Yuga's gonna show you up, and you're gonna go, hey, bro, now I'm gonna kill you. Now Yuga's get the little knife meme. He's gonna knife you.
Yeah. Well, unless it's against Luke.
Even against Luke, though. I'm just kidding.
He is. 100%.
Season finale.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's facts.
Well,
again, do I want him in any other duel? Not really. But if it's the season or series finale, yeah, I want him. He ain't losing.
He did. Well, he did faint against Gohai Yuga. Remember that?
He did. Yeah, okay. That's true.
That's a no contest. That doesn't count.
No. Luke took over. Thank God Luke was there, man. Because I don't know
Luke
what would have happened.
Luke took over and got the win.
Oh, my God. Thank God.
I'm not. I already got Dill, rage bait. I'm not doing it.
Dill, in this Yuga situation, then like you're kind of taking after the philosophical traits of one Lil Wayne because you're prepared for the worst, but you're still praying for
still praying for the best. Yeah, that's a good point.
What's the next line in that song?
No. No. And no.
I think the only swear he says in it is.
This game.
No, is that
this game is a something.
Yeah, that's right.
And then what's the line after that? I don't remember. I'm trying to remember Lil Wayne-ology. I know you guys are Lil Wayne-ologists. I'm trying to remember the line.
We have 46 months for Pick the Rick, Slifer Red.
Thank you,
Pick Love Rick. The duel between Mystery Duelist and Shin Goat. Oh, God. Pick Rick apparently loves 0-9
Shin Goat.
Wait, can you reread that, Pick Rick? Thank you so much.
Of course. 46 months, Slifer Red. Love the duel between Mystery Duelist, cough, cough, Dylan spoiled it, and Shin Goat.
Shin Goat.
Shin Goat.
That's a new one. That's a new one.
That is a new one.
I agree with that.
That is a new one. Shin Goat. Well, listen, Pick Rick, I appreciate it. And Shin Goat did not win in that duel, but maybe he'll win.
Yeah, we're
later
not sure if he's
going
to make it.
Wait, so he's Owen. Well, technically speaking, in the first part of episode 7, he did win.
Well, but right, fully on screen.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just saying.
But
So what we're saying is he doesn't lose. He's not. He does win.
Correct.
No, he's got a high. I think a high win percentage as far as LDS goes, and like his actual dueling record. It just when it comes to any on screen duels.
Yeah, he's not good when the pressure's on. He's like the opposite of Yuga.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, I was about to say. So if Shingo was dueling for you, you better call your mom and just tell her, hey, there's not even a I'm already dead even though I'm calling you right now. That's what it would be like if
I was in a situation where Shingo was dueling for my life, I would really be upset because I don't know what I did in life to deserve that sort of cruelty. Like at least with Yuga, like I'll give you that. Like, yeah, he's a pretty clutch duelist, so I'll give you that.
Thank you, I appreciate
someone
that.
Someone like Shingo, no.
Oh god.
It's over.
No. It's over.
What happened?
Soj over.
I'd rather
Manjome.
I'd much rather Manjome. Are you kidding? Manjome, I'd feel decent about, actually.
You have a chance.
I'd have a chance. No, seriously. Pick Rick, thank you for being a member. I greatly appreciate you. 46 months, that's awesome. Thank you, Pick Rick. Huge shout out once again to Rubens, who had one of the kindest donations I've received in the entirety of 2026 in the last few months, seriously. Thank you so much, Rubens. Just saying, it's been a while, still lurking. I know things are rough. Keep going. People like me still love lurking and watching. Thank you so much. Seriously, thank you so much, Rubens, once again. Appreciate all of you guys being here. Thank you. We are going to continue on with the donations here, and I believe we have one from the man himself, that man 666.
Yes, sir. Want me to read it?
Please. Yeah, is it a devil dono?
I was just interrupting. I'm not reading anymore. 666
devil dono.
Beautiful.
And he said, would you agree that a battery-powered toy is bad for child development? Are toys better if they help incur imagination and creativity? Absolutely.
Well, battery powered, like what? Bad. Like a drone?
I don't think we're giving your child a drone.
Somebody mute
Isn't
this
that
guy.
Wait, they make drones for like cameras. Like I remember,
followed up with that makes sounds. I think he's saying.
He means a battery powered toy. Like they have a toy
kid,
and you hit a button and it plays music.
Toys. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking about like when you would drive around one of those trucks that had a camera in it and you would like spy on your parents.
So I'll take this one. So
like
someone
from a spy
who
game or something?
Judges around who, kids a lot.
I am too.
That's not true, but I did learn about child development in school on multiple occasions. So ideally you want a combination. You don't just want toys that don't make sound. You want sounds because you want children to hear sounds and almost, you know, use their magic to figure out what they are exactly because sometimes they don't know what's coming from the toy. So you definitely, you know, as much as you want to promote imagination, creativity. Children, you know, want sounds. They need stimulus. You realistically want the brain to grow and expand. And if it's there's no sounds, nothing for them to kind of, other than just like the actual physical touch of it, it's not necessarily ideal. Now, that being said, could you probably have a child who has no sound or battery operated toys and they'll be fine? Yeah, it's definitely possible. And then the opposite could be said. Could you have someone who only has sound toys? I think that'd also be fine. So it's definitely an important part of development is hearing sounds, you know, getting a response. But, you know, if they hit something, it makes a sound. And, you know, touch it. Yeah, it helps their brain grow and develop more as well. So I wouldn't say that it's bad for child development by any means.
No.
I think, you know, giving a 2-year-old an iPad is a bad idea. I think giving 7-year-old cell phone and internet a bad idea, right? Like if we're going like full on, I'm talking babies, really small kids, you know, you want that. Whereas, you know, giving your kids iPads, cell phones really young, I don't think it's good.
Bad idea. Agreed. Yeah, I think me being like emphatic about it is like in my head, and I guess that's the importance of the question is defining battery powered and defining what area of child, like how old is this child and what stage of development. But like, yeah, if we're talking iPads, pretty much no for like, the first couple years, I'd say. Agreed. Like don't even like a 7-year-old, it's like if you're just sticking your kid with an iPad, like, hey, here, go play. It's like, all right, like maybe encourage something else so they can develop in other ways.
Yeah, agreed.
But but like if we're talking like a ball that spins lights and plays music, a stimulus is a good thing. Yeah. To Dredger's point, like stimuli are good.
Yep.
Yeah. It's all a balance at the end of the day. Because it's all a balance. Yeah. Even when we were kids, like when you're a little kid, right, you're playing with whatever toys, they had toys that made music. As you get a little bit older, 6, 7, 8 years old, we were playing video games too, right? Like we would be like, can we go play video games? Like I want to go play N64. I want to go play GameCube, whatever it is. Like, but our parents, at least my parents, were always like, when I was younger, like, yeah, you only got to play for a certain amount of time. You can play until dinner and then you're done. And it's like, okay, it's 5 o'clock, dinner's at 6. I have an hour to play Mario Kart, you know? And then me and my brother would be playing, you know.
But, what a swab.
GTA 4 at 7 years old, though?
Well, I remember when we were young, Pete, actually, I wasn't allowed to have it. Pete came over, remember? And he brought it over to the house, and he popped it in the PS3, and we were all playing GTA 4 in my parents' basement.
I don't think you were 7-year-olds playing GTA 4, but that's beside the point.
Well, yeah, considering we didn't also meet Pete until we were, like, 11.
Yeah, so 12. Many parts of the story are just so untrue.
Yeah.
Dylan and I mean,
I always say this, and I respect it for him. The man makes himself laugh, so shout out to him.
Well, I will say this: what I would do is I would like do a mix of all this. So I would like give my kid like not an iPad, but like a laptop, and I would open up Suno, and I would see what sick beats that the kid is able to create, and I think that would be like really good for his
development. Oh boy. Yeah, I take issue with that, mostly because Suno is what you're preferred. Like, oh, let me see if my child will make sick beats with Suno and not, like, an actual music creation tool.
Yeah. Let's see if they can program an AI.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, I want my baby to learn how to use an LLM to make fake music.
I knew that one would get Nick T.
Oh, boy. But it is music. Come on.
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
I'm dead.
No, but yeah, I don't know. I think so what's the consensus?
You see, there's a balance. You can't have all of one and none of the other.
Agreed.
And I think that
a mixture of what we said, not what you said.
Yeah. Don't listen to Dylan, but yeah. Like, because there's like, you know, when we're little, we had action figures, but we also had a Game Boy. You know, like there was like two completely different sides of like toys we would play with. But at the end of the day, like, you know, balance both.
What my parents used to do is they used to lock me and Dean in the basement. And until we got a certain amount of stars in Super Mario 64, we were not allowed to leave.
That would explain a lot.
And that taught us a lot about, you know, there were times I remember we were hungry, but we knew we couldn't eat until we got, I think it was 66 stars.
Do you know what the worst part about this story is? I've heard this fucking story before.
No, because it's true. It's a true story.
No, because that's because you're starting to run out of fake stories. You have to reuse. That's the problem, man. Him and Dean are so good at games. You've spewed some crazy stories in your life, then that we now have to reuse a made-up story.
Judge, the whole point of reusing them is if he reuses them on camera multiple times, it starts to sound believable.
I don't even think I've ever told on stream. I think that was the story I've told off stream. The best part is there is a non-0% chance that my parents will watch this, and my dad was not happy about the story I told a couple of years ago where I said
New York story.
He took me to Times Square and then I said, all right, find Penn Station. No, but he was always like a block away. Like he always had his eye on me. I just as an 8-year-old kid didn't know. And then when I got back to Penn Station, he was, he popped up.
Yeah, literally. And then he tells you, Dylan, you can't say that. Child Protective Services would have came. Like, bro, what do we mean? Like, come on.
You poor father, man.
That one cracks me up every time I think about it. Just
Dylan's literally dying.
The concept of it. That man.
Right.
Oh, my God. That man, thank you for the super chat. Yeah, child development. I mean, listen, it's going to be something. It's going to be something cool. I'm going to make sure that my kid is ready to take over this channel. I'm not going to give him this channel unless I feel he's earned it. And he's going to be ready. He's going to be ready. He's going to have to. I'm going to quiz him. A lot of people don't realize this, but he's going to get a 500-page, not a 500-page, I'm sorry, a 500-question Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime trivia that I'm already working on. He has to get at least a 90. Otherwise, he is not taking over this channel. So he has to get 450 of those 500 questions right. If he can do that, it's all about the various Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime. He will get the keys to Yu-Gi-Oh! Everything. What do you make of that?
I don't think the kid's going to show up for the test.
Yeah.
He doesn't even want the channel.
I definitely don't want the channel. I would just give back. Yeah.
No, I said I'm going to make it. I'm working on a
Dylan's
test.
Firstborn son.
Oh, hell no, he doesn't want it.
Well, he's going to get a 500-question written quiz.
Dylan, if you handed me that crap, I would just throw it in your face and walk away.
I would not want the channel. It's not for you, it's for my own son. You handed me that.
He doesn't want it for a 500-question test. How about this, Dylan?
He just has to get a 90.
If you do the test in front of me, I'll think about it.
Okay.
All right, when do you want to get together?
I can make you a 500-question test on medical terminology and anatomy. We can have fun.
Oh, no, that's like important stuff. I don't know. I don't
exactly.
I don't know about that.
Point.
I didn't go to school. All right.
You did go to school. We were in classes together.
We've got a $5 donation from Axel Hero. Axel Hero. Axel Hero, thank you so much for the $5 donation. Thank you for the link, Dono, my man. Question specifically for Nick T. We've seen about Shingo, do you think he will be as important and inspiring in Yu-Gi-Oh! Arc 5 as Sho is in GX? How do you compare the two? Nick T, the floor is yours.
Good luck, Nick T.
That's a tough question. That is a tough question because, unfortunately, the answer is no, much to my chagrin. But it doesn't speak to Shingo, that doesn't speak to Sho's quality. Shingo is not the type of character that would end up inspiring or becoming important because he's used as a clownish antagonist or like, whatever he is. Whereas Sho is a, spineless, worthless, like hack of a duelist who grows into something like that inspires. So like, I guess that's kind of like what the show wants him to do. So the answer is no, unfortunately.
By the way, he grows into that around episode like 165 of 180.
That sounds right. Yeah, that sounds right.
That's crazy. Yeah, dude. Listen, I'm not the biggest Shingo fan. They're not. It's not even comparable, though. It really isn't. Oh, my God. Axel Hero, you're too funny, man. Yusaku, thank you for the $2 donation. Thank you, Yusaku. Kids these days are growing up not playing physical Yu-Gi-Oh! With each other, but rather in the virtual Duel Links world. Don't you think that's sad for child development and socialization? No more card trading at recess and no more fistfights. Well, I will say this. I kind of agreed with you until the no more fistfights part of the message. Oh, but that being said, I think this is an issue that goes way beyond just Yu-Gi-Oh! I think social media has completely poisoned our society from the inside out. And I think the problem that you have is you have a lot of people on every single level, not just like young kids, every single level that are just not as involved in their community, not being like nearly as sociable as we once were as people. And like, as human beings, we need that sort of socialness. We need to be able to talk to people and have a sense of community and a sense of purpose. And I think social media has completely, completely rotted that from the inside out. I think technology has certainly exasperated that. And so I do think it's sad. Like, yeah, there's probably not much more dueling on the playground anymore. Like, that's not a thing. Everybody's got their phones and whatnot. So I think it's sad. I think it's an issue that goes well beyond Yu-Gi-Oh! However, but that's just my take. I mean, I hate social media. I think it's poisoned our society.
I agree. I don't even know what to add to that.
Yeah, no, I mean,
you summed that up pretty well.
I think there's good and bads to social media, but I think you're right in the sense that it's not used in a I think like the way it should be.
I think there's a tiny amount of good in social media. I think the tiny amount of good is being able to like stay in touch with people you want to stay in touch with.
Yes, exactly.
And ease of access there. I think that's a good thing. I think that's about the only good thing. And I think the problem is like that's not really what these companies are focusing on. They're focusing on pushing vitriolic content in your feeds, even if you don't want to see it. They're focused on dividing us as like people and as society. And at the end of the day too, the mental state, like you follow someone on social media, it is a complete highlight reel that is designed to just make you feel bad about where you are in life and make you think that everybody is doing so much better than you, even though that's just not the reality of it. So I think it's a poison, but I don't disagree with you in the sense of like, I can see the good of it, but that's just, it's just not worth it.
I also enjoy it for the entertainment, like the creator part of it, like video, like funny videos and like things like that.
Like the ones I send you.
But like legitimately, even though some of those I don't like at all, and some of them I very much like, but like that stuff is like what I'm on social media for at this point, is just to see funny memes or for me, I would always use Twitter just to look at like for sports news.
Sure.
Like that's what I had always used it for. And then now it's just like, you could barely even see what's on your own feed when you're on the sites.
And that's intentional.
Oh yeah.
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 It is. Yeah. It's like, oh, I don't, that's why I deleted it. It's like, oh, I don't follow all the posts I'm seeing are not by people I follow.
Yeah.
And they're all things I don't want to see.
Yep.
So that's when I'm out.
Yeah, it is a shame. Yusaku, though, I'm not sure who that was, but I do think it's sad for child development and socialization. I think that's something, though, that is, I think, literally, like, every group of people, regardless of age, is struggling with in this day and age. Yes. And I think social 100%. Media plays a big part in that. We have two other super chats. I believe great Fwee Weep, Nick T.
The great Fwee Weep, Palomine, donated $5.
Thank you,
Said, hey guys, hope you're all doing well. Dylan, what's your favorite numbers monster? Mine is number 6-7, Paradise Smasher, hashtag justice for Shingo.
Hashtag justice for Shingo. I'm not going to comment about that hashtag. I zoned out. What did he say his favorite monster was?
Oh my God.
Number 67, Paradise Smasher.
Just so you know, that monster has been banned for a little bit in the game. And I know that
prior
is
to
not,
the meme?
I know that is not his. Prior to the meme, that monster was... No, yeah, did not get banned because of the meme. Although that
I
would,
don't know.
That, could you imagine Konami banned it because of the meme?
Absolutely not.
My favorite numbers monster is probably Malevolent Sin or the Seven Sins. I just love the spider monster. So those are probably my favorite. I also love Ravenous Tarantula. I can't remember the name of it, but there's something so fun about... like a 7,000 life point difference and Ravenous Tarantula hitting the field and boosting every monster on your field by the difference in life points. And all of a sudden you've got 10,000 attack point monsters on your field. There's something really, really fun about that. So it's gotten me, they've gotten me over my fear of spiders, Ravenous Tarantula and Malevolent Sin. So I will go with those two as my two favorite numbers monsters. And I don't think anybody else, maybe Dredge.
I'll say 39 Utopia.
Yeah, that's a classic. That's a classic.
Yeah, can't wrong Utopia. I mean, I could do like one of the Utopia, whatchamacallit, other versions, but we'll go with 39.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is a classic. It's certainly the most, I would argue, iconic number monster, but
yeah,
it's a classic. Free Weep.
6-7.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very weep. Much.
Paradise Smasher.
This is for Shingo.
Paradise Smasher literally came up yesterday too when we were playing Master Duel. So literally,
design is sick.
Somebody, yeah, no, it is cool. But literally, somebody has mentioned number 6-7 Paradise Smasher now in back-to-back streams, which is concerning.
Then your audience knows you.
Yeah.
And then the final one I have on our end, anyway, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep. Is $5 from Ice Aiden.
Bow, wow, 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 wow.
Bump pressure.
Thank you, Ice Aiden.
Yes. And he said, hello, would prefer a good girl character, but not a duelist or a girl boss with that being her only personality. You can't have your cake and eat it.
Let me reread that.
I don't know what that was in regards to.
Ice Aiden, thank you. Yeah, I'm not sure, but that may have just been a generic statement, which is, of course, always welcome here on the
of course, yeah. I wasn't sure if it, yeah.
I would prefer a good girl character, but not a duelist... or a girl boss with that being her only personality. You can't have your cake and eat it too. The message is like kind of confusing me. I'm trying to like...
I think what Ice Aiden is saying is, would you rather have like a girl character that like her character is good, but her dueling's really bad? Or like a
he
girl
just doesn't
with a duelist,
no, I think,
but she doesn't really have a personality.
He missed the
I think
you.
He was missing the word you.
Yes,
yep,
would
that
you
makes
prefer? Because I thought he was talking about himself,
yeah.
And that's what was confusing me.
Yeah,
would
yeah.
you prefer a good girl character but not a duelist or a girl boss with that being her only personality? Like really good duelist but doesn't like really develop. I would prefer a good girl character even if she wasn't a duelist personally.
Same. Agreed. You want character development, I don't agree with
you.
That.
I'd rather prefer character development. Even I do agree, even though I do want to push against the phrase there at the end, you can't have your cake and eat it too. I mean, we have good guy characters that are also guy duelists, and I don't see a reason we couldn't have that. It's not exactly having your cake and eating it. If he may just be saying that
for the situation,
for the sake of the argument.
Like saying if you can't have both, what would you take?
Yeah, that's fair. In general, you can and we should. One of these days.
I mean, I would argue.
No, we've had.
I would argue Roman and Yuumu both fit that category.
Exactly.
Good girl characters, they were like, I mean, I don't know if they were like girl bosses being like that being her only personality. I think Ice Aiden. Yeah, I think the can't have your cake and eat. I think it's just like two bad things, right? Like
for this hypothetical,
singular personality, right? For this hypothetical, which I get, yeah. But no, I mean, I would argue that, yeah, Yuumu and Roman both kind of broke that barrier. And,
they
like,
did.
Asana, I thought, was very well written. Gohai Yuna.
Bingo.
So I think now it'd be tougher to find girls like that in the Gallup shows. I think Akiza is definitely one. But then, you know, you start having to, like, you know, twist and kind of ignore some major flaws with, I think, characters.
Yeah.
But... you know,
hey, maybe Yuzu's going to be a great duelist.
Maybe no. And listen, you know what? There are some people that love Yuzu. So, and at this point in the show, I remember even beyond this point in the show, I actually thought that she may give Akiza a run for her money. And there's some people that like would argue that Yuzu is better than Akiza. I mean, I've seen the take. I don't think it's a popular take, but I've seen the take. I've seen about every single take doing this for, you know, 10 years now. So maybe one of you guys will feel that way. Obviously, Dredger is the only one here that has the context of 5Ds, but, yeah. You know, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see how you guys feel. That's what it's all about. Ice Aiden, greatly, greatly appreciate it. And it is funny because, like, you even think about Akiza, which, Dredger, to you, of the Yu-Gi-Ohs yeah. you've seen Studio Gallop-wise, Akiza's the best girl for you?
Yeah, I don't think it's even... I don't think you can argue anyone else. Okay. Who else would you argue?
Some people would argue Alexis from GX. I would not.
What are they arguing?
I don't know.
Are they kidding?
I'm not sure.
Did they watch the same show as me?
I don't know.
I'll tell you there. That's wild. Alexis? Yeah. Alexis.
There is a girl in Arc 5.
I think some are saying them for different reasons.
Maybe, Nick T, but that still wouldn't depend
on the character. Not me. Not me, because, yeah. No, definitely. She's a...
Yeah, no. I know what you mean.
That's a child.
Yes. I know what you mean. But yeah, no. I mean, I've seen that take. You know.
Yeah, it'd be wildly wrong.
And then there might be one girl in Arc 5 that maybe you could argue, but you know we'll get to her when we get to
we'll
her.
Get, I when we get to her, we get to her. But is she the girl lead though?
No. Exactly. Although again, as I just said, I have seen people genuinely say Yuzu's the best girl lead in the Gallup Yu-Gi-Ohs. I have seen that take. So
yeah, I mean, from what I've seen, that's all. I mean, maybe I'll think Yuzu as well.
Yeah, you know,
yeah.
Everybody's got their own opinion. But yeah, I mean, listen, I'm in the same boat as you, Dredge. I'm not an Alexis Rhodes. I don't think she did anything in the show.
What did she do?
She slapped the guys around every now and then, which was funny.
Yeah,
but
that's my issue. Like, I'm looking at what did the character do development wise, plot wise, and then dueling wise, and she didn't do any of those three
so
things very well.
We are at episode 66 in the watch along. I don't think she has another 1v1 on screen win from this point on in the show.
Probably not. No, because she's not important.
There's 114 more episodes.
I know.
Jesus.
There's actually, and yeah. It's crazy. You think she'd have at least one.
You'd think. Maybe I'm forgetting one, but even if it's
maybe
one,
there's one against some no name.
Which I think I looked it up and I was like, are you, because I was like, she's gotta have another win. And I looked it up and I don't think she does the last 100 something episodes, but I mean, some people, again, I think there's a nostalgia tinge there as well with her being like the first, she's the first girl duelist, like main lead, because Taya is not a girl duelist. So I think there is some nostalgia there for that.
Agreed,
people
I agree
have.
From a nostalgia but, fact, yeah.
But I'm not, yeah, I think Akiza clears.
But
even
if
though,
you really have to get down to it, like.
I think Akiza clears, even though, like, you look at Akiza 2, and, right, she has a bit of a downward turn in season in the second half. I don't think it's nearly as egregious as some of the others, but.
I mean, she still gets some importance because she's a signer, because she is on the D-Wheel team. If, you know, there's factors that at least she's relevant. Whereas Alexis becomes literally irrelevant, unfortunately.
I would agree with that. I mean, her big...
It's,
you know,
it's sad, but...
All the duelists, I think, like, Manjome gets his big send-off win in season 4. Sho gets his big send-off
Sho
win
does,
in season
definitely,
4.
Definitely, Kaiser. Yeah.
Sorry, Nick T. But Asuka's big send-off win is a 2-on-2 duel alongside Jaden. It's not even like a solo win. It's not even like a solo moment for her. And then she has the opportunity to tell Jaden how she feels, and she doesn't do it.
Doesn't do that either.
And she doesn't do it. So, I just...
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I've just never been the biggest fan of her writing. But anyway, I believe we have one more super chat here from the lovely Fwee Weep.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. $5 from Fwee Weep, who said... Also, forgot to mention, super excited for the album drop soon, Nick T. I heard about it in the previous podcast. Yes.
Nick T. Even respond to that yet, because I think this is actually a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic transition to where we were probably headed anyway. These three do some amazing work. I'll start by saying Pete, Clueless Gamers, YouTube. It'll be linked down below. All their
First
stuff is linked
podcast.
Down below. First and 10 podcast, NFL stuff. They'll do some draft coverage soon, I'm sure. Nick T, tell us about the album. Tell us about what's going on in your world, man. It's all yours.
So yes, the rumors are true. Alan dropping not just soon, and despite me not promoting it or posting about it, I'm dropping it in a week from Friday.
Oh my god!
It's 9 days, so it's coming out soon.
Oh my god!
It's gonna be on all streaming platforms. It's called Spellbroken.
Nice.
I'm looking at the logistics, trying to figure it out, but I plan on doing a Twitch stream at twitch.tv/namelingnj now, by the way.
Yeah, that's what we're looking for.
No longer fighting moms.
Thank God.
No longer fighting moms. So I'm going to do an overhaul of that channel. I plan on doing maybe like, you know, my previous music streams have been sort of me and my guitar plugged in directly. Might try to do a little bit more full production to kind of give the album its day in the sun. And that, you know, we can celebrate the album, you know, it'll be available for purchase and stream that, you know, from that day on. And then, you know, maybe some other stuff when I get back from Costa Rica, some other Nameling related things like physical media and t-shirts. So who knows?
Nice.
Awesome.
Who knows? Be on the lookout. Thank you for bringing that up, Wee Wee. I appreciate
Hell that.
Yeah. Very much.
Thank you, Wee.
Let's go. Cal Breezy. 9 days, baby. We got to get a countdown clock. Wait, Dill. We gotta move. We gotta change countdown clock.
No, you don't change.
We gotta change countdown clock.
We might have to change it.
We might have changed countdown clock
for the next Wednesday night.
I'll
change it.
Next Wednesday night, we'll have the countdown on there. Yep, I love it. Yeah, I love it.
Don't forget to set it back after.
We won't forget that.
We don't worry about that.
I appreciate that.
I'm freaking dead. That's good.
Cal Breezy.
Yeah, nothing in the works for me to self-promote, so I'll slide this one over to the Dredgenator.
Don't worry, I'll slide right in.
Dredgenator
stream at twitch.tv/Dredgenator. We've been playing Bloodborne. We actually started the DLC and actually made some great progress back on Monday evening. I actually might do, for me, a mini marathon stream this Saturday. I believe my wife, you know, is working, and then she actually has plans, so I might do my first, like, I think I don't know if I've ever done, like, an 8-hour stream. So we might be doing that. That might
wow.
be I don't know if I can beat the DLC in 8 hours. I still have to beat, I think it's three more mandatory boss. Well, one is apparently the hardest boss I'm ever going to fight. So that's not ideal.
Well, it's funny because, like, there are a decent amount of people that would say the optional boss in the DLC is harder than Orphan of Kaz. I don't agree with that, but some people would argue it.
Yeah, I don't
so
know
it's
if
the
I'm
two,
fight
it's
that
the two hardest snake. Bosses in the game by far.
Yeah, so that's the thing too. It's like we'll see, but I definitely need to so maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll do like a mix of some Bloodborne, we'll do some Yu-Gi-Oh, some Fortnite, some Pokémon, we'll
cool
figure. Maybe
stuff.
Some I did some Master Duel. But yeah, we'll definitely be live this Saturday for a bit of the day, so hopefully if you're around you can come by.
Dredgenator, please check him out tomorrow. You might be wondering. By the way, next week, 9, 10, and 11 of Arc 5 analysis. Master Duel versus Chat GX watch along, and then we'll probably do a new game on Thursday. We'll do something. I'm not sure what it's going to be.
Ooh, we got a new game tomorrow.
And then and then on Friday we are going to do Digimon Beat Break watch along. Maybe something on YouTube as well, but I'm expecting a new couch to come that my dad is also driving to Delaware to help me set up and build. Nice. So it all depends on when that shipment is coming. So stay tuned to the Discord or just come by the stream tomorrow to get the schedule for that. I want to thank these three, Dredger, Calibro, Nick T. Shout out to Pete as well. Pete did not end up making it, but I'm sure we'll hear from him next week.
Yeah.
And a huge thank you to everybody who donated, everybody who super chatted. Huge thank you, especially to Rubens with the insanely generous donation using the link. Rubens, you don't know how much that means to me. Thank you so much. Thank all of you guys for donating. I seriously would not be able to do this without you. And I would not be able to do it without the three men to my bottom right and bottom. Thank you all so much for watching. This has been Talking Yu-Gi-Oh! Arc 5 Analysis, Episodes 7 and 8. Yuto and the LDS Trio. We'll see you next week for Episodes 9, 10, and 11. Thank you so much. And I hope you have an amazing day.
An amazing day.
Take care, guys. Have a great night.
Good
Thank
night.
You so
Everybody.
Much.